Welcome along then to the first Tuesday in April. And you know what that means? The Drew Buzney Show is back for our spring premiere. 10 more weeks uninterrupted to close out the first year on air. Today we talk about Scottie Scheffler and his recent dominance on the PGA Tour. The Final Four that comes away at the end of the week. More Pats, draft predictions, and the Red Sox shock so far. All that next on the Drew Buzney Show. And welcome back inside the booth in Schenectady, New York. If you're listening live, you're on WRUC 89.7, the first station in the nation, live from Schenectady, New York and beautiful Union College. And if you're listening on all the major podcast platforms, I thank you very much for doing so. Again, today we talk the PGA, NFL, NBA, and college basketball. So last night, I got the chance to attend the Iowa LSU Elite Eight game in Albany, New York. And I've never been to a college basketball game, men or women's, and it's very different than an NBA game. Because I've been to many Celtics games because I'm a huge Celtics fan, but the atmosphere is different. It's the bands and the cheerleaders and less TV timeouts. And in Albany, it was 90% Iowa fans, 10% LSU fans, and they were doing the starting lineups, and Angel Reese came out. No one really cheered for her. Flonjie Johnson, no one really cheered for her. And then Caitlin Clark. It was louder than a concert in there every time she touched the ball. Just the instant reaction when I was there was LSU's the away game, or the away team, sorry. There was no support for LSU. If they made a hustle play, they went on a run. In the second quarter, they were down 11 midway through the first, and really the end of the first, the second, they went on a run to take the lead ultimately. And you could hear a pin drop in the arena. And then the third quarter, where LSU goes so cold. I mean, they were shooting 50% from the field, and all of a sudden they dropped down to 38%. And the crowd was going nuts. I mean, unbelievable. It was like it was the Taylor Swift's Eras Tour in Albany last night, which was just a little hard to believe because I thought, especially on a neutral site, you know, Elite Eight game, LSU and their fans would make at least some attempt to get out to that arena. But I guess maybe they're more devoted on their schoolwork and, you know, Iowa people have a lot more free time. But I don't go there, so I don't know. But, I mean, I was in shock watching Caitlin Clark. The analogies to Steph Curry, she might even be a better shooter than Steph Curry. No space, step back, bam, three. I mean, when you think it's a dead possession for Iowa, bam, she bails you out with a shot. And I know it's a team sport and it's not an individual game, but her team's just good enough where the spotlight is on her, and boy, she doesn't disappoint. I mean, it's crazy. And, you know, I was excited. I was going to see Caitlin Clark for Iowa, Angel Reese for LSU, and Angel Reese just happened to foul out. But they're just such different players. Angel Reese plays bully ball down in the paint. You know, her main game is layups. I don't think I saw her take a shot farther than 2 feet from the rim. And she did force it a couple times. Definitely when they went on their cold streak in the third quarter, she did take some god-awful shots. And, you know, you can blame her there. But other than that, it was a solid game. And Caitlin Clark, I mean, played the full 40 minutes and, you know, did not look tired. Did not look like she was getting tuned out of the game. She gets angry. You know, more angry than I thought she did last year. And definitely yelling at the refs more. But it was just a surreal experience to be there. It was honestly a great time. The arena was great. We got there at 7 o'clock and it wasn't busy. The tip was shortly after. And so, you know, not enough good things to say about Albany because they did get dissed by ESPN. But Albany was great. They did a great job with parking and police and the arena. And Albany's a great city, so let's turn that narrative around that ESPN tries to shed on Albany that it's a terrible place to be. But it's not. It was great. I had a great time. I would go again. But we're going to transition to the PGA Tour and the main headline the past couple weeks, and It's the number one player in the world, Scottie Scheffler, and his dominance. Winning the Arnold Palmer Invitational just 4 weeks ago, then the Players a week after, becoming the first player to ever defend his title, meaning he won in 2022 and 2023, or maybe it was 2023, 2024, sorry, excuse me. But he became the first player to defend his title, which is very hard to do, especially at what they call the fifth major championship in the Players, the PGA Tour's flagship event. And just 2 weeks later, he made his next start at the Texans Children's Houston Open at Memorial Park, which was just redone. Absolutely amazing, phenomenal, unbelievable to watch. And he was a putt away on the last hole to force a playoff. And I'm pretty sure if he was in the playoff, he would have won. And you look at this dominance, especially when you compare it to women's golf and the LPGA, who Nellie Korda did what Scottie Scheffler could not do, and she won three starts in a row. And then you kind of zoom out, and you look at the PGA and the LPGA, and what's the difference there, and the three wins in a row versus the non-three wins in a row? You look at Nellie Korda, who did the three wins in a row, who just did that this weekend, and there's not two tours going on there. It's only the LPGA. It's not the PGA, the DP World Tour, you know, the Asian Tour, you know, the LIV Golf League. It's just the LPGA, and you look at that feat and that, you know, ability to win three starts in a row, which is only a handful of players have done. Very unheard of. Unbelievable. I mean, she's in the Hall of Fame for sure. And then you look at Scottie Scheffler, who came one putt away from getting closer to winning three in a row on the PGA Tour, which is supposed to be the elite elite of men's golf. But you sit back and look, is three wins in a row really that big of a deal nowadays on the PGA Tour? Because they're playing against bums now, you know, who probably would not be on the tour if it wasn't for LIV Golf. If LIV Golf did not steal away the best players in the world, these young guys, you know, the 40-year-olds who were trying to make their way back on the tour, they probably wouldn't be there. They're only there because they got automatically bumped up when all the LIV Golf guys left, or the PGA Tour guys left to go to LIV Golf, who were all ranked higher than them. So Scottie Scheffler is playing against people that really shouldn't be on the PGA Tour. So the debate comes up, is the three wins really valuable? Maybe it has to be five wins to really count. Maybe it has to be 10. But is three wins in a row the same as when Rory McIlroy and Tiger Woods did it? And I don't think it was. I think, yes, he would have been the third player to win three wins in a row, but it wouldn't mean as much. It would be Tiger Woods, Rory McIlroy, blank, 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 empty spot, dirt, soil, earth's core, and then Scottie Scheffler. Because you're not playing against the best players in the world. And as sad as it says, the LIV Golf League has taken that away from the PGA Tour. As we are stuck week in and week out with people on the leaderboard, especially in non-signature events, of people you don't know and you have to become accustomed to. And while it's not hard to maybe do some research and learn about people, it's not ideal because you want to watch the best players in the world, not these nobodies who shouldn't be on the tour. So there's always this debate if LIV Golf should happen. And I don't think that debate has to come up in this instance, but it's, you wonder if LIV Golf did not happen and all these players are still on the PGA Tour, is, well, honestly, would even two wins be possible again? Because you're talking about the best people in the world that used to be on the PGA Tour, and now it's, you know, let's say 50 players, let's say 35 maybe on LIV and 15. There's definitely less good players on the PGA Tour than there are on the LIV, and that's no doubt. If you just look at the history of the major winners, the people that made their name on the PGA Tour are mostly on LIV now. And so is Scottie Scheffler's dominance really dominance, or is it him just being better than the average player? And maybe this means that the majors really hold up to their name. They really are the majors now. Because the majors are the four times throughout the year. Maybe you could say five because the Olympics are coming up. So there's five times this year. The Masters, US Open, the Open, PGA Championship, and the Masters. Where you get the PGA Tour's best, the DP World Tour's best, and the LIV Golf's best. You know, that's where you can truly count dominance. And in that case, Scottie Scheffler is not the number one player in the world. He's not the most dominant player in the world. Honestly, Brooks Koepka should be the number one player in the world and should be the most dominant player in the world. Because if you look at the past majors, runner-up holding the lead in the Masters, winner of the PGA Championship. You look at Scottie Scheffler, he's had good results in the majors. I mean, not excellent. He won a couple years ago, but hasn't really done anything substantial since. So if you really want to measure dominance in the golf and the best player in the world, nowadays you can only look at the majors because that's when all the best players are playing. And it's a shame that the LIV Golf people cannot get into the official World Golf rankings because you can't really see who's the best anymore. So, you know, Scottie Scheffler being one, that might not be the case. There could be a LIV Golf guy who won, I don't know, Taylor Gooch has won five tournaments this year on LIV Golf. I mean, he could be up there, but they don't get official World Golf points. And it's just interesting. So if you want to look at this debate, it's Brooks Koepka maybe. Maybe even Phil Mickelson. Maybe the LIV Golf players are more dominant than Scottie Scheffler. They just can't get noticed as much, really. They don't have official World Golf points. You know, they really only play against these other players in 4 or 5 times a year. So it's almost false dominance, or it's an allusion to dominance that Scottie Scheffler has. And I'm not taking away. He's a phenomenal player. He is one of the greats. He's really good. But I don't think you can call it dominance just yet. I think you have to see what happens in the majors to really say that this is Scottie Scheffler's dominance. He's maybe the next Tiger Woods. So I think the Masters and the PGA Championship, the first two majors of the year, will tell us a story. Can Scottie Scheffler continue this play into that? And if he can, and, you know, he can get some top fives, even be in contention on the weekend, then yes, he has the dominance, and I can say he's the best player in the world. But if all of a sudden these majors come around and he's the bottom of the pack, struggling to make the cut, you know, falls back on the weekend after being in contention on Thursday and Friday, then he can't really say that he's the most dominant player on the golf. But as we get halfway through our show, I do want to take a quick break to announce a very special event happening next week. Undoubtedly, one of the best weeks of the year in all sports is the week of the Masters, where the LIV players and the PGA players go head-to-head for the first time since the Open on one of the most prestigious and most beautiful golf courses in the whole world, Augusta National. And I'm happy to announce, for the first time ever on the Drew Busney Show, we will have a special broadcast next Tuesday at 5 p.m. on all things golf. We will look ahead to the Masters, look at the course, look at the field, make our predictions. We'll be talking all things golf. It's a Masters special on the Drew Busney Show next week. And tune in next Tuesday, a week from today at 5 o'clock, for a show I'm very much looking forward to. But now let's get back to it. And one thing I do want to mention is, if you were wondering, curses are real, because there is the Drew Busney curse, or maybe it's the reverse curse. I don't know. I didn't force anyone to do bad. I forced them to do good. But I'm going to call it the Drew Busney curse, the Drew Busney jinx, because it sounds better than the Drew Busney show did good for this player. But whatever. Ever since I did the story and my sports story segment, I believe it was 2 weeks ago, on the NC State men's 1986 Cinderella story to the national championship, NC State's men and women's team have been on their own Cinderella stories, with the NC State men's winning on a nail biter in the ACC tournament and making their way now to the Final Four, and the women's team also now making it to the Final Four. So if you really want to believe in, you know, my words can affect reality and, you know, affect what happens outside of the walls my studio is in, then vote for NC State to win the championship, because I guess what I say happens. So NC State's going to win the national championship. Drop your bets. Bet your whole bank account. No, I'm just kidding. Do not bet your whole bank account. But I guess my word is truth, which is pretty cool. So we've talked a lot since the Patriots season has ended about their draft decisions and what's going to happen. And we've gotten through the pro days. And what I got from the pro days is they don't really matter. I don't think a player playing bad in a pro day really can affect, because Jaden Daniels didn't really play well. Drake May played okay at best, but you can't base your decision off of the pro day. You have to do game film, everything. And if you look at the quarterbacks, Drake May, I believe, has the most upside. He has the most raw talent. I compare him to Robert Williams of the Celtics, who came into the NBA, you know, raw talent, could be good. And without the injuries, he probably would have been on the team still and contributing heavily. Excuse me. So I do believe the Bears are going to take Caleb Williams, or it's certain they're going to take Caleb Williams. So it really comes down to the Commanders. Are they going to trade it? Are they going to draft Drake May? Are they going to draft Jaden Daniels? Or honestly, are they going to draft J.J. McCarthy? And that's unknown right now. But I have a feeling they're going to go Jaden Daniels with the 2 picks. So the Patriots are going to be left with Drake May, and you have to take him. I mean, we're in a major quarterback deficiency on the Patriots team right now. And regardless if he's going to play this year or next year, he has to be the first person you take. A quarterback has to be the first off the board. And I see all these rumors around that they're going to trade back for the Vikings and Justin Jefferson, but no way on earth that the Vikings would trade away the best receiver in the NFL in Justin Jefferson. So I think I'm going to stand with this position until, I believe, we have 2 weeks. So we'll do another draft special and we'll talk about this more, but it has to be Drake May, and I'll get into maybe the second and the third and the fourth round picks and, you know, what I expect, and we'll talk about the season. But I just wanted to revisit that quickly because it's the turning stone of the franchise, of this new era in Foxborough. Is this decision, this third pick, is going to be the fate of what's going to happen maybe the next 10 years or so. So as we get to our last little segment today, it's on the Red Sox, and their season started out on the West Coast. They won last night against the Oakland Athletics on April 1st, April Fool's Day. They moved to 3-2 on the season, and one of the great surprises through 5 games, through one cycle around the rotation, has been the starting pitching so far. And, you know, what was god-awful last year, they've had one walk and I believe 4 earned runs. So it's been absolutely amazing. The bullpen, you know, in the Seattle 4-game stint was average at best, but we always looked at the starting pitchers. This is what we need to fix. We wanted Jordan Montgomery. We wanted Blake Snell. We wanted these players. And, you know, Craig Breslow, I guess, knew more than us, and Alex Cora knew more than us, and they stuck with it. And, you know, in the small sample size, it's working that our pitchers are playing well. But the question is, what is Craig Breslow going to do next? How are we going to react? And there's nothing I think he can do now. I think we have to wait till we get to the early summer and see how the season goes, because I was just thinking about this analogy. Is, I don't know if you ever got a haircut. Well, I hope you got a haircut. But you walk out of the barber or wherever you get your haircut, and it looks amazing. You go home because you have hair all over your head. You shower. And after you get a shower, it's not what I look like anymore. At least for me, when you get out of the shower, it looks so much worse. But I guess that happens when you can't, you know, have say over your haircut, but it's fine. If that's the thing I'm complaining about in life, my life is great. So, you know, just a little joke out there, but I think it's just a too early sample. Yes, I'm so happy with the way they're playing. They're exceeding expectations miles and miles and miles ahead of what I thought we were going to do. But I think we got to get through the A's. We got to get through the Angels and get through opening day with the Orioles back at Fenway. And the next thing you can reevaluate, or the next time you can reevaluate, is at, maybe June, July, kind of when my show is then, almost like June 14th-ish. And if you think, you know, we have a legitimate shot to make the playoffs, you go full ahead and you trade away. You try and trade away something. Maybe it's draft picks. Maybe it's a player, maybe like Trevor Story, who's not playing well. Maybe he's batting like 178 and you trade him away because you want to go full stream ahead. And I think Craig Breslow needs to show that, you know, he wants to win the playoffs. So if we get close in the summer, he has to go for it. But that's my 2 cents. And it's really hard to say because we've had really not a lot of games, but we are going to wrap up the show. And in the spirit of March Madness, a short sports story about an underdog team is on your way next. This is the story of the time the Pittsburgh Pirates defeated the New York Yankees in the 1960 World Series. The Yankees had won 10 out of their last 12 pennants coming into this 1960 World Series, and they were, of course, strong favorites to beat the Pirates. Everything was in the favor of the Yankees. Their stats, their players, their personnel, everything. And by the end of the series, New York outscored Pittsburgh 55-27. But the results were not as the score would make you think. The Pirates' Bill Mazeroski hit one of the most famous home runs in baseball history with his bottom of the ninth game-winning homer in Game 7 to take the championship. It inspired countless baseball dreams across America, except maybe in the Yankees industry in the Bronx, to come to fruition. And I know it's a short story, but in the theme of March Madness and underdog stories, I just wanted to put that little tidbit out there. But I will see you next week, where we take a trip to the most beautiful place on earth, Augusta National, for our Masters special on the Drew Busney Show. Thank you again for joining me today. Have a great day. I'll see you next week. Be safe.